Planet FM is a platform that champions diversity. Not all our programs reflect the views of the station. We encourage you to consider a wide range of information from trusted sources when making decisions about your health.
We are hearing a lot of stories from within New Zealand of injury.
Can you tell us?
Yeah, of injury. So I've spoken to quite a few people in the military, people, nurses, who are saying, I could tell you some stories. Frontline people. Well, to start with, I was called one late one night by a friend who said, I've got a friend who's in a hospital. And she's texting me right now. It's like 11 o'clock at night. There's somebody who's in the bed next to her who's a border worker, and she having a very bad reaction to the vaccine. They keep telling it. All the staff are talking about it. And so she was giving us updates as it went along, and she sounded really serious. This woman was not well. And I thought, the next morning I got up and I rang the hospital and I said, I understand that you have a border worker in there who's had a serious adverse reaction to the vaccine. I'd really like an update on their condition, please. And of course I got ping-ponged around all the different people. I had to leave messages with whoever the communications person was who returned the message and said basically no one there to that description, right? A couple of weeks later, the same friend said, I found the person who was in the hospital. I found her. And I'll put you in touch. And so we got in touch and we had a talk, and gee, she was really sick. What stood out to me in her description of how unwell she was, it started 3 hours after the vaccine. She was well before that. Massive brain fog, headaches, no energy, fever, shaking, you know, all of that kind of thing. But the worst part was, like, it felt like her organs and her bones were on fire inside her body. She was in so much pain. She was begging the doctors when she got to hospital. This was like 4 or 5 days later, she ended up getting Healthline called the ambulance for her. And she was sick the whole way along, and she wasn't getting any better, and she was just declining worse and worse. She's a mother of three little kids. She couldn't go to work. She's the main breadwinner, and she had to go to hospital because she just felt so terrible. She didn't know what to do. She begged for painkillers. The problem is, when these people hit the system doesn't know what to do with them. She had a wicked cough for probably about a month. It was really bad, you know, and you think you're trying to stop the cough from COVID or whatever else you're still trying to stop, and you got them all anyway. And there's heaps of others.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
In the studio this morning, I have Alia B., and she is a spokeswoman for voicesforfreedom.co.nz. And she's here with me this morning because we here in New Zealand, we have found ourselves with COVID coming into being, that we have been hearing in many ways just one story. And that one story has been from mainstream media and the New Zealand government. However, there has been other stories too that haven't had any media presence whatsoever. And so voicesforfreedom.co.nz have come into being to allow us to hear another side of the equation. And I have Alia B here with me this morning. So I wish to say kia ora and thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us today, Alia.
Thank you for having me. I'm really pleased to be here.
Excellent, Alia, because we have, I call it, a team of 5 million people, and we want to make sure that this team knows the full consequences of everything that's happening at the moment. And we are now in the throes of learning so much, particularly from overseas, that there is another huge story going on, and we just need to be able to hear this other story. So thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And could you tell us the background of Voices for Freedom, please?
Sure. Well, last year, Claire and Libby and I, we've been friends for a while, and we were watching what was happening with respect to the response to COVID-19. And we were looking around and we were thinking, this isn't right, something's not right here. So we spent a lot of our time in lockdown just totally buried in science and research and just reading. Other people were sort of out in the garden doing things like that. We weren't. We were heads down, bums up. And then the election happened and that didn't quite have the
desired result.
Yeah, the desired result. And so we looked around and we thought, oh, surely somebody's going to stand up and do something. Somebody's, you know, we're looking around, we're waiting to see somebody who's going to lead the way. And nobody came, and we have this chat going between the three of us, and we were like, one day we just said, oh, we think it's going to have to be us. And so that's where it was born. And that was probably in about November, December last year. So I think we launched in December 2020, and we had an event at a venue in town, and that was probably towards the end of December. We had quite a few goals to try and reach. First of all, we could see that around the country there were people everywhere who were saying that they were lonely and that they couldn't talk to people. They didn't have anybody to talk to about this, so they couldn't speak to their family. Sometimes they couldn't speak to their friends. Sometimes they couldn't even speak to their partners. And so they just felt like they were kind of going a bit nuts. So we saw that as a need, and we wanted to start with one of the goals that we had was to create groups around the country where people could come together, find community, have conversation, just connect with other people. And so that was one of the first things that we did. We put a call out to the people that had quickly come on board as soon as we set up our social media and email channels and things like that. And we had some really amazing people step forward, willing to lead and bring people together in their neighbourhoods and their communities. And so I think we're up to about 47 of those people around the country now, which is amazing. And they're really inspirational people. You know, it's not an easy thing to do this, to stand up and be that person in your community that can get kicked back for that.
Yeah, courageous.
It's really courageous, yeah. And that's one of our taglines of our actual, the Voices for Freedom is Courageous Conversations. So we created the space for people in the community to come, and those are just growing and growing and growing. So we went to one the other night on the North Shore, and it was packed out. A community centre was completely packed out.
Packed out community centre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's lovely. Yes, I know. I heard of it. It was 70 in a small hall somewhere the other day. Yes.
Yes, yeah.
And so have you got, how many members do you have at the moment?
I think we're getting up to about 10,000 on our actual email database, but then there's extras on top of that through the different social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram, Telegram, places off the usual kind of Facebook places.
Yeah, so it's important for people to know that you've got Facebook, Telegram, Instagram.
Gab. Yeah, that's more of a placeholder at the moment. I don't think we need more people to try and sort of mirror our content around the different places. So it's there, it's waiting for the moment that we do get the boot off the mainstream platforms, which we think might not be too far away because we're certainly rattling some chains.
This is sad. This is really, really sad. It's upsetting to know that you could be kicked off these platforms solely because you're asking questions.
Yeah, and we're really careful about what we write too.
Yes.
So we aren't putting out a whole lot of controversial conspiracy theory kind of nonsense as what some of the newspaper mainstream media would have you think.
Yes.
We just post scientific articles. Overseas and national media articles that might have something of interest in them that we'll put up. And more recently, we've been putting together accounts from professionals who've been contacting us. So their stories, that's something that we really want to run with soon.
Like doctors or professors?
All sorts. Doctors, nurses, pharmacists. Oh, who else have we got? Paramedics, scientists. We've had, you know, molecular biologists. There's so many midwives, students, military.
Military?
Yes.
Policemen?
We actually haven't had too many policemen yet, but we are hearing through our channels that there are definitely policemen that are not on board with what's going and where they see the future of this heading. Yeah.
Yes. So it's building up. There's a momentum across the country.
It sure is. Yeah. The other day was Mother's Day, and I had put a call out on the Facebook page in the morning for medical professionals to get in touch with us on the email, and I didn't get to leave my bed until after 4 o'clock. That I've just spent the whole day answering emails and engaging with people online for that. There's so many people out there.
There is, I know, and one of the biggest challenges that I find is I want to give at least, if not three sentences, three paragraphs, because I want to be able to communicate with people.
Yeah.
But boy, it just takes all your time.
It does. When you're one-on-one, you know, there's thousands and thousands of people out
That's
there.
That's right.
Our inbox at the moment, I think, is around 3,000 emails in it. We just can't keep up.
Well, have you been able to get some good volunteers?
We have.
They're showing up.
Yeah, we've got amazing volunteer lists. So we put a survey out a little while ago and we've got over 500 volunteers ready and waiting to go. That creates another problem.
That's right.
Because
organizing them.
Yeah, yes. We need somebody to go through the list and figure out who can help where and where they're best placed. And so we have somebody who is doing that. So we're still in the process of organizing that. So once that is ready, I think we'll become a force to be reckoned with.
That's what we like to
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, well, any startup has a huge challenge because you have to vet, in many cases, all
you
these
do.
People to make sure that they're going to be on the same page and that they express themselves in such a way that they're kind and compassionate
yes.
and caring.
And an ambassador for your organisation too, because it's important that we have a certain way that we would like to present ourselves and to the public, and so we do manage that quite tightly. And also in terms of letting people say into our email inbox to help us with clearing the kind of backlog, that's a really important role because there's all sorts of things that come through there, really
that's
sensitive
right.
material.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Like a security thing, you have to make sure that what's coming through goes to the appropriate people and also then you're going to have your criticisms as well.
Yes.
And that's a big one.
Getting lots of criticisms.
etc. Good for you. So I'm only just trusting that you can really build up this momentum. And I've heard that your main strategy is to build an organisation of something like 200,000 people by lunchtime.
We don't start small. We aim for the stars.
Excellent.
Yeah, well, Claire was reading something a few weeks ago, or might have been a little longer, that was looking at the kind of numbers that you need to tip the balance in a situation to a point where the government or the authorities need to actually listen to you. And that number was around, I think it was around 3.5%. And
of local population.
Yeah, and I mean, and obviously that would be of the adult population in New Zealand. So I think the calculations would run it was about 150,000, 200,000 people that we needed to reach. And so that is our goal, and that's where we're heading.
That's good. That's good. And how do you fast track it?
Well, you know, it was quite good, really, this latest endeavour by the government to, with the propaganda campaign for this vaccine rollout, happened to time quite nicely with what we had planned, which was a flyer. Well, we actually have a whole resource pack that we've put out, but part of that was these series of flyers that we wanted to get out across the country. So initially we had thought we'd do 500,000 flyers, and we had been fundraising so that we could get enough money to pay for them. And then the government came out with some sort of announcement that they wanted to reach 1 million people within a certain time frame, and so we just looked at each other and said, well, We'll see your 1 million, and we'll raise you 1 million. And so we just went out and did it. And we went to our database of our email list, and we said to the people, we want to do this. This is our goal. And can you help us? And we raised enough money to print 2 million flyers in 48 hours. Yeah.
Wow. Now, this is really, really good because this is a people's movement.
Sure is.
And one thing is the government at the moment are our elected servants.
Yes.
Who are only giving half of their story and they're not listening to we, the electorate, we the people. So well done for that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's all the people.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of support out there.
And can you give us a little insight as to these flyers? I know you've got... There's a number of flyers. There's one about the masks.
Yes, so we have a mask flyer that is, I think you've got it there. So what's all the fuss about masks? And it has several sort of mask-related facts on it. And then on the back, we have on all of them, because we're trying to reach the general public, we have gone with QR codes. And we know that a lot of the people that might support us might not be too happy with that because they're not so happy with this whole scanning and tracking and tracing and all of that stuff. But
that's for real.
Those aren't the people that we're trying to necessarily reach. We're trying to reach the people who are on the fence, who have that little niggle in their mind that says something's not right here. I don't know what it is. I'd like to know more. I don't know which way to go with these choices I have in front of me. So these are the people we're trying to reach with these flyers. And so we have the mask one, we have a vaccine one, which is the one that's hit the which
headlines.
Is the one that hit the headlines in the last couple of weeks. We've lost count of how many times we've managed to get in the media and the news reports. It's been a lot.
Have they led the 6 o'clock news? First one off the rank?
Not quite. Not quite, but I think we have made some headlines, front page papers down south.
Yes, down south.
Yeah.
Not up north where the New Zealand Herald controls.
Although we did get a full page in there one day, full page article on us.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's excellent. Mm. That's excellent. Tell us more, because this vax one, I think, even though the mask one is important, because there's... Did you want to say just something to the masks?
No, that's fine. I mean, that's good for people who are not so sure about what's happening with the mask science, and it seems to have been brought in without really any evidence. It's questionable evidence anyway. There's lots of evidence on both sides, and it's not really settled at all.
Yeah. So Dr. Fauci then says, oh, wear two masks.
Yeah, or three.
That's
right. Who needs to breathe, eh?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You try counting your money while you hold your breath.
So we have this vaccine one. It has eight facts that have all been debunked by some of the scientists in the country. So we've had a woman from Auckland University and another one from Waikato University who have gone through each of the facts on the list and tried to tell us about how they're wrong. Right. It was interesting to see. And we haven't quite got round to doing our debunking of their debunking yet, but other people have. And some of them are pretty loose. They are relying on a lot of likelies and maybes and sort of loose language that's not really backed up by any hard evidence. And in some cases, they've totally kind of proven our points, like with the one to do with the exemption from liability for the vaccine manufacturers and ACC. In our country, these things aren't hard to find. Last year, they came up with these documents that sort of released them from liability, and we do have ACC in this country.
ACC is excellent.
Compensation Corporation. So if you are injured or harmed in some way from a vaccine in New Zealand, theoretically you would be able to make a claim with ACC and get some sort of compensation. But in reality, if you speak to anybody that's ever been in that situation, that's not as easy as it sounds. So
is this when it comes to a vaccine?
Yes. Yes, vaccine injury is really difficult to have acknowledged in this country. First of all, you have to have some medical professionals that actually agree with you that whatever you're suffering has come as a result of the vaccine that you received.
And if it happened 5 minutes afterwards or an hour afterwards...
It's a coincidence.
That's how it works. Oh, boy. Yes,
yeah.
I see the difficulty.
Yes.
Okay, is there any other little ones that you'd like to point out?
Oh.
Because you've had so much media. I heard the other day that Otago Times got in contact with you.
Yes, so yeah, we made their front page, and I think we've had some opinion pieces on us. And there was another one that actually wasn't too bad, like it was fairly balanced. They actually had some people that they quoted who were, I mean, I don't want to get into sides, but they were from this sort of way of thinking.
Yes.
So that was better than what you would expect in some of the other leading kind of papers.
Yes.
In terms of the things on the list here, some of the ones that have been interesting to us lately have been the claims around, well, the situation with MedSafe's 58 conditions that they put to Pfizer. So when we discovered that document, it was late at night and I was up with a nurse friend of mine on the phone just reading through it together going, are you reading what I'm reading? Oh my goodness, this is really serious. So they were looking at things like impurities across lots and lots of different parts. Each of the 58 claims were to do with impurities.
Impurities in the actual injection.
Yes, and the components of the injection.
Yes,
so
yes.
I guess they're Adjuvants looking at the manufacturers.
And all that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, the lipids and
other stuff.
Yes, yeah. So one of the ones that really caught my eye was the fact that they had written there about concerns about genotoxicity and also to do with molecular mimicry, which they are things that can, well, in one case, you know, with molecular mimicry, you can lead to an attack on self. So the body mistakes whatever that it's been trained to attack for a protein in the own body. And then we had read things from overseas from senior scientists who had said that they were concerned about this particular protein that's involved with the reproductive system, in particular placental tissue. And they were saying it's very similar to what the one would be generated from the vaccine, and how did we know that that couldn't cause some serious sort of fertility problems down the track? And no one really has answered that yet, and I don't believe that there's been any kind of studies into it. So that was something that when I saw that in MedSafe's list of conditions, I thought, holy moly, they're thinking about this too.
So there is some integrity and intelligence in MedSafe, in New Zealand MedSafe, asking specific questions of Pfizer. And there's 58 questions, and they have not yet been answered, correct?
Well, here's the problem. If they have been answered, so they have these, so each of the conditions has a due date.
Yes.
And they have an interim report that's due, which, and a lot of those dates have gone past now, but the later due date is somewhere around July this year. That's after they've rolled it out to how many hundreds of thousands of people far?
Yeah.
And then initially people who had been in contact with the Ministry of Health and MedSafe to find out how we would find out what the answers were to those conditions were told that, yes, they would get those in time. But now they've changed their tune and they're saying that that information will not be released to the public. It is commercially sensitive. So we're going to be trying to find ways around that because we think that is actually public interest to know what the answers are to these questions. And it would be, what are our government choosing? They're choosing the commercial interests of the vaccine company, the pharmaceutical company, or their own people, you know?
A very stark difference.
Yeah, yeah. There's just so much of that going on, and that's a lot of where I like to spend my time is in that sort of space of the research and things like that, but more recently I've been involved in some of the more, you know...
Yeah.
Well, it's been fun, you know, designing flyers and that kind of thing, but yeah.
Yes, so I'm going to call MedSafe, have asked some very pertinent questions.
They have, but it seems that those questions have been overlooked by the media. They've been played down by the Ministry of Health.
Yes.
And
a nice way of saying it.
Yeah.
Played down.
You're completely ignored. And then there's the issue with going into how the vaccine has been passed through or provisionally consented in New Zealand. So they used a section of the Medicines Act to approve this medicine, or I guess it's a treatment or a vaccine. And that was only allowing, I guess what we think that is usually the use for this particular part of the Act is to allow experimental or novel kind of medicine that might be used for people that have cancer or who are in a situation critical. Where perhaps, where the risk and benefit profile might be different to that of a healthy young person in New Zealand right now who's facing the choice of whether or not to have the vaccine. And the specific wording in it says that it's for a limited number of patients. So we and Sue Gray has thought that's not really 5 million people in your team of 5 million. A limited number is a limited number.
Yes.
And so that's getting challenged through the courts. The High Court in Wellington, yes. Yeah. And that was yesterday.
We look forward to a lot of clarity there. Now, there are a number of things on that list, and I think it's really important that we hear some of them. Can you say some of the others? Because people need to know.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Well, shall I read them out?
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Number eight was vaccine companies are exempt from all liability. We've talked about that. Number seven, all COVID-19 vaccines are currently experimental. Some trials won't end until 2023. And if you go to the clinicaltrials.gov, which is the American, or I gather it's American, website that hosts all the clinical trial documents, you can find that. It's easy to find the Pfizer end date for that. And number six, the vaccine has not been shown to stop you catching SARS-CoV-2 or passing it on to others. And that's an interesting one. Because some people will go, well, what's SARS-CoV-2? Well, SARS-CoV-2 is a virus that causes the COVID-19 disease. So you can't really catch COVID because COVID is a description of the disease. So it hasn't been shown to stop you catching or passing it on to others. Well, if you go to one of the references that we have, if you scan the code or go to the website from our flyer, you will find a British Medical Journal article by Peter Doshi who goes right through what the trials did and didn't investigate. And so they weren't actually investigating whether or not it stopped people from actually catching the virus or transmitting it to others. It was looking more at prevention of mild to moderate symptoms. So that's quite an important one to remember. Our government, well, our Prime Minister, a couple of weeks ago, stood up in a very awkward media sort of briefing one afternoon and said that we do not expect it will stop you from catching or passing on the virus. This is just to stop people from getting so sick and going into hospital and stopping people from dying. She made a real emphasis on that. That was really interesting. Even if you go, well, they've changed it now, interestingly, after we've highlighted it, some of their online documents that you can, their PDF resources that you can get off their website, had it clearly on that statement on there as well. However, we do not yet know if it will stop you from catching or passing on the virus, which is an important thing that people understand if they think that they're getting a vaccine that will stop them from doing that, because they're also told that you take it to protect those around you. And yes, some of the scientists will now be saying that there is evidence starting to come to light that it may prevent infection and transmission to a degree. But we challenge some of that as well, because especially some of the things coming out of Israel. So Israel is quite highly vaccinated, and they have introduced the vaccine at a time when the WHO changed their description or their classification of a case. So prior to that, it was you just needed to have a positive PCR test, whether you had symptoms or not, didn't matter, right? You were positive for COVID, you got written down as COVID. If you died and you had a positive test, you got written down as a COVID death. But after the 20th of January, which is when this document came out from the WHO, they included a whole lot of other things that they needed to have in order to be considered a case. So they talked about the cycle threshold for the PCR test. If it was high, that meant that it was likely that the person had a weak positive, which could have indicated a prior infection or an error. And so the WHO have now said that they need to relook at that test if that's the case, if it's a high cycle threshold. They've also said it's a good idea to have clinical symptoms, epidemiological links, so connection with other cases. They actually had a whole host of other things that they want people to look at now in order to call a case a case. And so that came in at the similar time as you start to see the numbers going down in Israel. So we don't know if they've adopted that case definition or not, but it's worth looking at, because it's an important thing that would, regardless of any introduced treatment or prophylactic, that itself would cause a lowering of the numbers.
Okay, yeah. It gets a little bit complex.
It does, yeah.
Oh boy, yes. Because I know, I've seen Telegram out of Israel, and there's all sorts of things going on there. There's a lot of, it's a divided country on this issue, isn't it?
It's pretty horrific.
Hugely horrific.
Yeah.
And if you have got access, listeners, if you've got access to Israel, particularly through other media, other than the mainstream media, you're going to hear some horrendous stories that's going on. And the Prime Minister, he doesn't help either.
It's really divided.
Yes.
The whole Green Pass system that they're using, that's essentially like a vaccine passport, where you can't, you're not allowed to go into gyms or restaurants or, you know, public places if you don't have your little green pass.
Meanwhile, we have 660 at a park.
50,000 people.
50,000 people. So there is a lot of peculiarities in this.
Yes.
And we have to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, it's never as black and white as it's made out to be in the media.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So some of the other ones, so the only reason given to take the vaccine is that it might reduce symptoms. Well, that's what the study showed, the clinical trials, that was what they were looking for. And that's fine. It's fine if that's what you want to take it and that's what you think, that you're aware of that and you still want to go ahead. That's your choice. The problem is with that is that the statistics itself... It depends if you're in the older age group with comorbidities, then I guess you do have a higher risk of coming into trouble with if you got sick with COVID. But anyone under 70 who's reasonably healthy is not really at risk of much more than mild or even no symptoms at all from COVID. So you have to weigh that up in terms of being informed and having informed consent.
Yes, because my question is, in New Zealand, no babies, no infants, no children, no teenagers, no 20-somethings have gone down.
No.
And so what's happening is that it seems the comorbidity of the 70-year-olds and 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds, their immune system is weak. They've got heart problems. They've got obesity. They've got diabetes too. And all of these people are going sick and possibly dying.
Yes. Well, you know, it's a complicated picture because some parts of the world, they would say that they haven't had any excess death, even though they might report higher death rates from COVID, inverted commas, their overall death rates aren't too different from what they would be expected to be. And those are the sorts of things that we should be looking at, because I think some cases, as they admitted to it here, that they had a liberal kind of approach to reporting COVID deaths.
A liberal.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so they, well, I think pretty much all of the cases here that we've had have been with COVID, not from COVID or of COVID.
Okay, this is very important. You said with COVID, but not from COVID. And I know that in some of the stats there, they say there's some question marks. Some people were sick anyway, and then but they found COVID. And so that's what will be liberal.
Yeah, an inclusive approach.
Yes. Now, is there any more?
Would you like me to go through them all or not really?
So anyone that stands out. Because I've got other questions.
Okay, well, why don't we... I mean, there's deaths and serious injuries are being reported around the world at an alarming rate. Of course, a lot of that's anecdotal because you just don't get past the systems. They won't tell you whether it causes it or not because they're not designed to do that.
I'm speaking with Alia B. of voicesforfreedom.co.nz. voicesforfreedom.co.nz.
We're hearing a lot of stories from within New Zealand of injury.
Can you tell us?
Yeah, of injury. So I've spoken to quite a few people in the military, nurses, who are saying, I could tell you some stories.
Frontline people. Okay. Now
yeah.
This is why I'm getting... I want to talk to you about the suicides a little later on that are not being reported.
Mm.
But the frontline border people and the first responders, I feel sorry for them because... Mm. Already they've sort of thrown their life on the line anyway without the COVID thing. They're just here to help people.
Yeah.
And now, please.
Well, to start with, I was called one late one night by a friend who said, I've got a friend who's in a hospital and she's texting me right now. It's like 11 o'clock at night. There's somebody who's in the bed next to her who's a border worker and she having a very bad reaction to the vaccine. They keep telling it that all the staff are talking about it. And so she was giving us updates as it went along, and she sounded really serious. This woman was not well. And I thought, the next morning I got up and I rang the hospital and I said, I understand that you have a border worker in there who's had a serious adverse reaction to the vaccine. I'd really like an update on their condition, please. And of course I got ping-ponged around all the different people. I had to leave messages with whoever the communications person was who returned the message and said basically no one there to that description, right? A couple of weeks later, the same friend said, I found the person who was in the hospital. I found her and I'll put you in touch. And so we got in touch and we had a talk and, gee, she was really sick. What stood out to me in her description of how unwell she was, it started 3 hours after the vaccine. She was well before that. Massive brain fog, headaches, no energy, fever, shaking, you know, all of that kind of thing. But the worst part was, like, it felt like her organs and her bones were on fire inside her body. She was in so much pain. She was begging the doctors when she got to hospital. This was like maybe 4 or 5 days later. She ended up getting, Healthline called the ambulance for her.
So it was 5 days after in this case.
And she was sick the whole way along and she wasn't getting any better and she was just declining worse and worse. She's a mother of three little kids. She couldn't go to work. She's the main breadwinner. And she had to go to hospital because she just felt so terrible. She didn't know what to do. She begged for painkillers. The problem is when these people hit the system doesn't know what to do with them. They don't understand what's happening. Yeah.
It's experimental.
Yeah. She had a wicked cough for probably about a month. It was really bad, you know, and you think you're trying to stop the cough from COVID or whatever else you're trying to stop and you got them all anyway. And there's heaps of others. We're hearing stories of strokes. We're hearing stories of, like, anaphylactic reactions, all sorts of fertility things going on, lots and lots of brain fog, crippling headaches. And
have you a standout story?
I can't say anything more other than that Jane story because she's one that I've spoken to myself. Okay. So I can't tell you more about the people who I haven't talked to. But I can say what the people around them have said. So the people in the military have said there are people that are really sick after the vaccine and that no one will report anything. The nurses aren't reporting anything. So these sorts of adverse reactions aren't making it to calm. What's really important when you have an experimental injection like this giving out to the whole population, you know, at the end of it, is that you are watching really closely for safety signals, and you are basically, we should be recording anything that happens in a temporal relationship with the injection. So if it happens within a few hours or a few days or even a few weeks, it should be written down so that it can be recorded and signals can be spotted, but that's not happening. And the experts will tell you that it is happening, but the people that we're talking to are saying it is not happening, and these are including the nurses, brain aneurysms, ICU admissions, deaths. It's just, it blows my mind that this sort of thing is being covered up or ignored at such a huge scale. So we are definitely looking for whistleblowers in those sorts of fields who would be prepared to speak with us about what's happening from their perspective.
This is sad because it's horrible because New Zealand, we're a small country. Everyone knows we're about 3 degrees of separation from everybody.
Well, that's the thing here, right?
Less than that.
Yeah, you can't really hide it.
No.
I think you can hide it for so long, but then when it becomes more widespread, everyone knows someone and someone will start talking. And then you do find out one way or another.
Hmm. Yes. Well, to see if we can find another way through this, hydroxychloroquine and zinc has been used overseas. And frontline doctors in America and Dr. Simone Gold.
Yes.
They've been hammered by the press and they've been just pushed down all the time. But hydroxychloroquine.
Ivermectin, zinc.
And that's right. And that's what
vitamin
I was going to say. And
vitamin.
Vitamin
D.
Vitamin D. Is
yes.
it D3?
Yeah, well, that's what I've seen. I mean, you know, there's a lot of research out there if you care to look.
And you do it when you look. DuckDuckGo.com.
Yeah.
Google is not our friend anymore.
No.
DuckDuckGo.com.
Yeah.
Please.
Well, you know, I'm not an expert on this, and I'm not an expert on any of this. I'm just a person who's interested and reads. And so what I'm seeing and hearing and reading is that there are doctors overseas who are using all of those treatments in one kind of combination or another and having great success. And that is disturbing that in our country that no one is looking into that. And we have OIA'd the government, Official Information Act requests of the Ministry of Health, to find out what advice they're giving around vitamin D. Others have talked about ivermectin. And it seems that they don't have anything. That they've not made any guidance to any of the DHBs or their health professionals about what they could do to help people to improve their baseline health. It's criminal what's happening. They've had a year to do it. They've done nothing.
Thank you. Because I noticed that we could actually get hydroxychloroquine through Pharmac up until around about the 28th of March in New Zealand last year for other particular needs.
Mm.
But when COVID came in, Pharmac were told to not bring it into the country.
Yes, there were other ones as well. So there was another natural plant from that they were using overseas in an African country, I forget the name, maybe it was Tanzania, that was a sweet wormwood, Artemisia, and they were using that as in one of their natural remedies that they had, and it was in some kind of drink. And as soon as that came out in the papers, whew, boy, they were quick. It got banned. You weren't allowed to import it.
And then the Tanzanian Prime Minister mysteriously died because he got some COVID tests on a papaya on a goat.
Yes.
And papaya and the goat had
COVID. Positive.
And mainstream science, medicine and the media all closed ranks on that.
Yes.
And this is why we here in greenplanetfm.com, we're just doing our best to be able to bring to everybody the fact that there are always two sides.
That's right.
To the story.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really love our kids and we really want a good future for them, we'll do our best to make sure that we get the truth.
That's right. And this is what we're all for. Three of us are mothers. We've got 8 children between us.
You've got 8 children between you. Yes.
And so this is what motivates us to do this. We see their futures are being sort of torn away in front of our eyes, that they're not going to have that innocent childhood that we had growing up, that they're hearing stories of young children who have this terrible anxiety about COVID and if they get a sniffle and if they're scared that they're going to get sick or die or pass it on to somebody else. There are stories of people in kindergartens whose three-year-olds are in there. And when somebody sneezes, they say, oh, you better get a test for COVID. You know, and I just wonder what we're doing to our children.
Yes, well, I know a policeman who does the beat in Queen Street. We've been doing it recently anyway, or through last year. And so I asked him, I said, well, what's happening? And he said, Tim, he said, that's mental, a lot of mental problems. What's the word for it? What did he use? Mental and psychological illness.
Yes.
Everywhere, and it is.
Well, we're hearing that from, we've been in touch with a psychiatrist in Wellington. He's amazing, Dr. Emmanuel Garcia. And his practice down there is just, they're just overloaded. They can't see all the people. It's hideous what's happening in terms of the psychology services are overrun with need. I was talking to another guy who said his daughter uses those services and they're booked out 18 months in advance. Like, it's just, I don't know what you're meant to do in that situation. And we've completely got our heads in the sand over the consequences of this response.
Thank you, because I want to talk about what's happening. I know I've had many interviews of all sorts of people here relating to the fact that the suicides in New Zealand have been totally suppressed. Mm. The numbers, we do not know. Mm. But I guess if we went around to certain funeral directors in the city, we would get maybe a better understanding, because they would be attending a funeral and they would hear from people who are attending a funeral say, it was a suicide.
Yes, yes. And we had heard at the time, through the main lockdowns last year, that the people who had family members that were in the support services, like first responders or paramedics,
ambulances,
police, ambulance, firemen, that they were attending a lot of suicides through that time. But then the narrative is completely different from the media.
Well, you see, this is what's happened. Our servants in Wellington, and we're paying their salary, they are ignoring we the people.
Yeah.
So is this a democracy?
It doesn't feel like it.
It doesn't feel like it. And this is what people need to know. Listeners need to know that I mean, I'm just a simple human being just wanting some simple answers.
Mm. Yeah. We just think it's not, what we're asking for is not that big a deal. You know, we just want debate. We want discussion. We want to be able to talk about the science. We want those scientists and researchers and medical professionals that are standing up, sticking their heads up and saying, you know, we've got this other perspective. We want them to not be shut down. We want them to be able to be listened to and talked to and discuss what it is that they're bringing up. Right now we've got maybe, what, 5 experts in the country that we listen to, and that's it?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
How many PhDs, how many doctorates, how many professors, how many who are very, very skilled in all aspects of molecular biology and in viruses and understanding, you know, deep down within the atom, virtually. And yet they've been ignored. They're just a closeted few.
Yes.
And this is definitely a big problem for us.
It is a problem, and one that we're trying to remedy.
Yes.
Grassroots style.
That's right. Now, I just want to get back there. I know frontline health practitioners and chemists are also seeing increasing levels of stress, anxiety and mental health across the board. Mm. And no doubt the pharmaceutical industry is dispensing a lot of drugs to sort of...
Yeah.
What's that story?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I haven't heard so much about that kind of thing, but I have been, in the last day or so, I have been talking to pharmacists through our email.
Yes.
They've been getting in touch with us, and they are really worried, more actually from their own personal perspective, because they're being, like the Dental Council and the Medical Council.
Hippocratic Oath.
Yeah. Yeah, they're being funneled into this situation where they're only allowed to speak about the vaccine in particular in a positive light, and they're expected to take it, unless, of course, they have a very narrow sort of list of contraindications that would allow them to have an exemption from it. But they're not allowed to talk about it in any kind of way that's not positive, online or in person. If people ask some questions in their professional capacity, they're not allowed to tell them, you know, what they think in terms of the evidence that they have read. So these people are being shut down. Their voices are being silenced and their licenses are hanging over their heads.
Yes, well, people don't realise that every doctor in particular, they have a medical association over them, and they have to defer always to the medical association. They cannot speak out about a certain thing because they have found themselves on a cold face.
They have a script.
Yes, and they've been told what to say, and if they don't, there's a good chance that they'll lose their license to practice, and there goes their occupation.
That's right, their ability to support their family. There goes another person that's open-minded in their field that is lost.
Yes.
And then you keep narrowing down to the compliant people.
Yes, well, this is a huge one for us. So, Alia, how can we raise the vibes of everybody?
What we want to do with Voices of Freedom, what we want to do around the country is we want to connect people.
Yes.
So we've got these groups that are set up all around the country. If you go to our website, you can register for a group and we will put you in touch with the local coordinator and then you can go along to their meetings. And so those groups are to allow people to create community and relationships, but also to share skills and to improve their own ability in certain areas. So, like, you might have some groups that are doing gardening or somebody that's looking into alternative currencies, for say, trading, bartering with each other.
Yes, good.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But, you know, the other part of it is that once you've got all these lovely communities set up around the place, then they can also go and do things like maybe meet their local MP, go with a little group, talk to people, reach out to the community, talk to other people, their business owners, the people on the street, get to know what are they thinking, what are they worried about. Kiwis, it seems, aren't talking. They keep a lot of this close to their chest.
Too much so.
Yeah.
I mean, I've experienced 17 years of this radio, and I implore people to network through phone calls, through conversations, through emails, through Facebook, and we still have this reticence to be able to share. This is so important because essentially to many it could be a life and death situation.
That's what we feel, and so that's what we're encouraging people to do, and it's working.
Yes.
That it really is happening, and it's so amazing to watch. So once we have all of these lovely communities set up across the country, when there is something that needs to be done, we just click our fingers and say, hey, guys, it's time now. Do this, this or that, whatever it is, the action that we're wanting to do. Stand up together. We've got all our merchandise. So we've got these bright, amazing T-shirts that we have. They're bright blue. They're happy. They're fun. They're vibrant. And, you know, so you can't miss them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we get out there. Our next thing that we want to do once all these 2 million flyers are delivered is that we want to go out in small groups with a sign and with your T-shirts and with a clipboard around the country and just survey the people, find out what the people are thinking, find out what's important to them, what they're worried about, and that will help to inform where we go next.
Because this is a very good idea, is have a clipboard and ask questions.
Mm.
I once stood outside a health food shop and I asked people coming out, where did they get their water? What did they drink? And believe it or not, this is about 12 years ago, a lot of them are still drinking tap water, full of chlorine and full of fluoride. And I was shocked.
Mm.
But it gave me an understanding of the people's consciousness. We're not taking that jump. We have to have the purest of air, the most vital unsanitized water, and, of course, organic food.
Yeah.
And so what you're offering now is groups of people, I say, start off as cells and then meet other groups of cells and then join up with clusters of cells.
Yes.
And
yeah,
this is what you are doing.
Yeah.
And I know I belong to a number of spiritual groups. They've got a slightly different viewpoint.
Yeah.
And yet I can cross-pollinate between all these different ones.
Mm.
And what the whole game plan is have the people in New Zealand, just quickly, I was in the nuclear free movement back in 1984, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And for us, in the end, what happened that everybody who was wanting nuclear-free New Zealand, because we didn't want to be a target for Russian missiles, solely because we had no real beef with Russia. Our fight wasn't with Russia. The Russians were between America and Europe.
Mm.
And so all the people got involved quickly with making nuclear-free zones throughout New Zealand. And then when we had something like about 107 nuclear-free zones, be it councils, towns, cities, or regions, that came to around about 67% of New Zealand's population, which then gave the mandate for David Longhi, the Prime Minister, to then make New Zealand a nuclear-free country because there was enough people on the ground.
So it's organising.
I mean, look, this is no time for being splayed out on a couch. This is action time, particularly.
Too right, yeah. I haven't really watched anything. We haven't had TV for many, many years, but, you know, occasionally I would indulge in a few kind of Netflix things in the evenings and later in the evenings after I'd done my other work, but there is no time for that right now.
Nothing. Zero time.
Yeah. Everything is just so important. I've said to some people the other day, you know, I haven't been able to clean my house this entire year. Don't come to my house. But, you know, we're doing like 80 to 100 hour weeks. It's just, we are working like crazy people on this.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, bless you, because I'm the same. I had a look at my back doorstep this morning. I thought, and this sort of thing. I did clean the bathroom sink, but all the dishes were done.
Yeah.
And my bed was made.
Yeah.
But these sort of things. But boy, go, go, go. I'm on it 24/7, 365 days.
That's right. There's no time off.
There's no time off.
There's no time off. And, you know, we're looking at other things too. So it's not just the groups. The groups are part of it. The groups are a really important part of it. But we're also looking at things like the legal cases. So Claire, my co-founders Claire and Libby are both legally trained. So they are ex-lawyers or seeking to become lawyers again. And so we are really interested in challenging some of these things through the courts. That also takes a lot of time because there's a lot of preparation, and we've been helping with the case with Sue Gray, and there's another one that's going to be coming into the employment courts as well. Yeah.
Yes. I was asked, what is the remedy? Now, there's been a number of meetings, and you're getting these meetings out there, you're going out there, and what is the takeaway that people will go away from these meetings? What you've said today, yes, but you want them empowered. You want them standing a little taller when they walk out the door. And so when they go home to their family or loved ones or whatever, they can say, guess what?
Yeah.
This is happening.
So we're doing a few things. And the one in Auckland that we have had a couple of expert guest speakers. So we've had one woman who came and did a non-violent communication course with us. It sounds kind of a bit airy-fairy, but it was actually really important because if you're having these conversations with people, may there be people on the street, or they might be people in your own family or people that are really important to you, you don't want to stuff it up by getting kind of, you know, angry or shouting at each other or upsetting anyone or offending them. So there was some really good skills that she taught the people there about how to diffuse sort of tense situations, which was really good. And then we had another course about informed consent so that people come away with knowing what their rights are, and then they can talk to other people about what their rights are. And so it spreads. So with every person that you empower with some new learning, or even if it's just them witnessing other people standing up and seeing that they're part of a much bigger group when they thought that they were alone, that gives them the confidence to go out there and realise that they can do it too.
Yes, thank you for that. This is really important because conflict resolution. Mm. I mean, there's cool schools in New Zealand. And cool schools, there's thousands of schools learning this from the Peace Foundation in New Zealand.
Mm.
But the prime ministers, of the last so many prime ministers in this country, refuse to get out there and say, this is a good idea. If we can teach children how to basically reduce conflict and find innovative ways for reconciliation of opposing points of view, and get beyond adversity and polarity and find ways through a disagreement, then this is really important. We have to have these skills. And I spoke to another policeman. I ask all policemen. And they said, domestic. He said, there's so many domestic conflicts at the moment. He said, we've been called out all the time.
Yeah.
Solely because of COVID and et cetera.
All the stress,
and survival situation, living in a house and lockdowns with a spouse that you don't get on with, is terrible.
Mm.
And so they're caught in this as well. And their time is taken up writing reports. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
So what it is that the knock-on effect of a society that's nearly cowed by this hybrid information war that's going on, that's impacting so many people when all we really want to do is be loved, love each other,
pretty
and
keep
having the candle burning strongly.
Exactly. At the end of the day, it's just about connecting with another person, isn't it? The person in front of you.
That's right.
And sort of not being offensive to them, hearing them, listening to them, and then that becomes reciprocated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you see, reciprocity is a very important word. And, you know, there's 7.8 billion people at the moment sharing breaths. And we have to be able to, in many ways, allow New Zealand to show that we can actually bring the threads of global community together at the same time as we do it on a localised situation. Yeah. And as you said, I've said, particularly with farmers markets across New Zealand, there's many of them.
Yeah.
And you can get good, high-quality food.
Yes.
And the people who are there are usually up-tempo, shall we say, entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
They've got communication skills. They're wanting to grow the community. And that's a good place to start, too, for voices for
freedom.
That's
true, yeah. We have got some people that are attending the farmers markets and having little stalls with the flyers and talking to people.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good way.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's an excellent way because I've been sort of involved with unity consciousness for a long time, that we've got more in common as a humanity than we have in the opposite.
Yes.
And so let's see if we can get on and at least start a conversation.
That's right, and try and avoid this us and them kind of thing, because that's, I think, where they want us to be, is having conflict with each other. So labelling, it's dangerous, I think. It doesn't really help.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. I found myself in Moscow in 1986, during the period of glasnost and perestroika, where the Soviet Union was looking at other ways. And one of the things was that if you get the opposing person to have a drink and you agree on your drink, well, hey, thank you, we've got an agreement. You want to have a vodka, I want to have a beer or a bourbon. And then you want to feed, or you want to have a wurst or something like that, and I want to have a vegetarian something, okay, shake hands, agreement. And then the next one is bring a grandchild and put a grandchild on each other's knee and say, okay, what do you want for your grandchildren?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got 5 seconds.
Okay.
What's your last, what do you want to be able to say to hit one ball into orbit?
Mate, that's a bit of a hard one, isn't it, to throw me on that? I would just say for people to come to our website, come and join up, sign up to our mailing list, hear what we're all about. The weekly emails that Libby writes are really neat. They're really something to behold. So come and join a group, get involved, stand up, speak out.
Good. And look at the website. There's a whole lot of links there too that you can actually check out what's happening in the country and also overseas.
Yeah, we write blogs and there's all sorts of things going on there, as well as our social media while it's there.
Yes, Joseph McCullough. Dr. Joseph McCullough is doing very well too in America, but he's been pushed down.
Really,
because he's over the target.
Mm-hmm.
He sees it. And, of course, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, Claire was just on a thing with some sort of summit with him on the weekend.
Oh, good. Yeah, he's the kingmaker.
Yeah.
Yes. Excellent. Well, look, Alia, thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's really good. When I was outside the studio and I could see you coming, I saw this person coming towards me, and I thought to myself, that has to be you. And I said, hey, Alia. Oh, your aura tells it all. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye. That was Alia B of voicesforfreedom.co.nz. I wish to apologise. I talk too much. I apologise to Alia. Sorry. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send. And remember, even Facebook. To tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it. Spread it. Radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies, but of 7.8 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency.
and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 500 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch in the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere ura.